To introduce our first speaker, Kathy M.
Hi, everybody. My name's Kathy, and I'm an addict.
Kathy.
Is it me that's just warm, or is it warm in here? Because I'm very warm. So if you see me, I'm having a hot flash. So just ignore it. This workshop is about service. But before I talk about how I got into service, I'd like to share a few things about how I came into the program and a little bit about myself. Well, let's just begin that I'm from upstate New York, and my family moved around a lot. But before that, I do want to point out that I have what you call a severe hearing loss, and I wear a hearing aid in my right ear. And it was diagnosed when I was about 3 years old. But I was blessed to have such a wonderful speech therapist that taught me how to talk. But as I start sharing, you may notice, I'm kind of like monotone, and you may notice that sometimes I can't pronounce certain words, words that begin with a TH, or because I've been told that sometimes I have a lisp. But I'm able to share about that today because for so long I had a lot of shame about that because I'm not deaf, I never learned how to sign, and I'm not fully hearing like probably all of you. And so I grew up in regular schools, but it was a struggle for me because I wanted to be just like everybody else. I always hid my aid, you know, in my ear with my hair. And I always acted as I knew what everybody was talking about. And a lot of times that would backfire on me. And, you know, kids can be cruel. I got laughed at. And I ran home crying. My mother would say, oh, don't be bothered with that, you know. So I kind of like stuffed those feelings down as a young kid. So I grew up kind of like ashamed of this, angry that I had this handicap, and I just managed to get by school. You know, I did get through high school. Another thing is we moved around a lot. I'm from upstate New York. My family moved to Pennsylvania. Then we moved to Denver, Colorado, and finally we settled in Silver Spring. But each time we moved, it was very difficult for me to leave my old friends and make new friends because I didn't want anybody to know this about myself. And so I isolated myself. And so I can see that that can be a symptom of my disease. And even like growing up, like I had an unchaperoned party at my parents' house. They went out for the night and I invited like maybe 20 people and 100 people showed up and egged the house and ran toilet paper through the trees and all that. And I started stealing when I was 13 or 14. So I look back and I see how by the time I was 16, I picked up my first drug. When I moved to Silver Spring, I was 16 years old, and it was 1969. Some of you may not have been born yet, but that was the year when I was walking through this high school and there were like, I didn't know where I fit in. There were like hippies over here with the long hair and blue jeans, and there was the greasers on this side with the motorcycles and the black leather jackets and the greased back hair. And then there was like straight people. And the first person I met in that school, she was with the hippies. So at 16 years old, I started smoking pot out in the schoolyard. And I was doing things so I could fit in with this crowd. So I pretty much did anything and everything to fit in. And that meant I was smoking pot, I was taking pills, and I just pretty much gave my family a hard time. I was running away. But I managed to graduate high school at 18. And when I turned 18, I left home. Well, what happened was I graduated high school, but I went to a junior college. And I was studying to be a dental hygienist because I like to see everybody smile. But I had a girlfriend. Like, my lifestyle started changing because I took off the blue jeans and started taking care of myself. And I was putting on dresses and going into the clubs in Washington, D.C. And I had a friend who introduced me to pimps and prostitutes. And so my life started taking another turn. And I got into prostitution. My girlfriend introduced me to a madam. And I was scared to death. But you see, by the time I was 18, my concept of sex was, well, Kathy, if you're going to give it away, you might as well get something for it. So when I turned my first trick at 18, I took some Valiums and I drank some alcohol just so I'd be numb, and I did it. And after it was over, I couldn't believe how easy it was. And I kind of got attracted to that lifestyle. But it was a matter of weeks before my mother noticed, who is this 50-year-old lady calling here? Why are you coming home so late at night? How are you coming home with all this money? And rather than answer her, I left home and I moved into a friend's apartment in D.C. And I was 18 and I was going to college, but after school I was going out at night on 14th Street, and I would be out from maybe 9, 10 o'clock to 2 in the morning. So needless to say, I dropped out of college. And eventually my drug use was going down. I started shooting dope. And as a result of shooting dope, I started going to prison. And in 1977, I went to my first treatment center. And there were NA meetings in this treatment center. But I would see people hug and smile and be happy, but I just wasn't ready at that time. So I went back out. And I got arrested, and I had a parole hearing. And I had a choice between going back to prison for 3 years or moving to Pennsylvania, where I went to treatment, and being around people in the fellowship. And I did that, but I kept going back and forth from D.C. to Pennsylvania, and I kept getting high. And, you know, the vicious cycle of using and using. I came back to D.C. in 1981, and my sister got married. And I hit another bottom, I should say, because she was getting married, and I was a maid of honor, I believe, and I could not function without being high. And I ruined her wedding. And I went to my parents in their hotel room, and I said, I need to leave D.C. because D.C. is my problem. If I just get away from the people, if I just get away from the area. My parents were living in Florida at the time, and I thought, if I go down there, live with them, get a job, I would be okay. And I did that, but they wouldn't let me live with them. I went to my second treatment center in 81. And I stayed clean for 1 year, from 81 to 82. The thing that I had learned is if you don't change, the same person is going to go back out and use. Because even though I did go to meetings, I did get a sponsor, I was working the steps with my sponsor, but I was still doing stealing from the stores. I was still seeing a dope dealer that I have from D.C. who is now living in Fort Lauderdale. Look how good I'm doing. You know, and I, you know, we went out, and I was still seeing him. And in Florida back then, what they would do is they celebrate their anniversaries at the last week of every month. And my anniversary was May 5th or something of 82. Well, my parents and all my friends were expecting to come to my anniversary the end of May, so I had to lie and tell everybody I was clean. And I stood up, like here, at my anniversary, acting as if I had 1 year clean. And I really didn't. And I felt so much guilt afterwards that I went out and got high after the meeting. And that lasted about a month, because I left Florida and I came back to Washington, D.C. And God bless Washington, because, you know, even though my addiction was in D.C., I got clean in D.C. It doesn't matter where you go. You have to take yourself wherever you go. I came back to D.C., and I'm working on 22 years clean. And even though I kind of forget certain things because I'm getting older in age, but I do remember the day I came back in town, I hooked up with a girlfriend of mine because I wanted to get high, and I put up the money. The next day when I was looking for her to get my money and to get high again, she was nowhere to be found. And I knew I had a taste of Narcotics Anonymous to know that where I was going, if I continue doing what I was doing, or calling the hotline in D.C. and trying to find a meeting. And I did. And my first meeting was June 11, 1982. And I've been clean since. And what did I do differently this time? Well, number one, I didn't pick out my sponsor. Number one, let me say this. When I walked into my first meeting there, there weren't too many people there. It was like one little circle. And it was mostly men, and I thought that was a good reason to keep coming back. It was just one little circle. And there was a guy there that I used to use with. And he was one of those kind of guys who had the big hands, and you could see the abscesses. And I really didn't think he was still alive. And I talked to him, and he had 2 years clean at that time. He was my inspiration, because I said, if he can stay clean, so can I. And I kept going to meetings every day, and this guy came up to me and says, I have somebody that would be a good sponsor for you. And her name was Carol, and she's been my sponsor ever since. She just celebrated 25 years about 2 months ago. Well, Carol was the area service chairman, and back in 82, if I can remember right, is like Baltimore, Virginia, Central Maryland, Frederick. We were all one area. And the people in D.C. would go to Baltimore, the Baltimore people would come down, and we would support each other. And more than anything I wanted was to get involved. I was like, let me tell you something. Drugs, when I got high, I liked the feeling of not feeling. I like the throwing up. I like being confident, and I can talk to you any way I wanted to talk to you. I liked all of that. So when you took the drugs out of me, I was scared again. I was insecure, inadequate. All those feelings that I had about myself before I even used. So one of the first things I did when I came back in was I got involved in service. I went to, my sponsor talked me into going to an ASR meeting. And back then, they didn't have any rules or regulations that you have to have 6 months clean to have this position. So I took the hotline position. And I had that position for about 3 years. And then we didn't have a newsletter. And so I got involved with about two other people. There weren't too many people who wanted to get involved. So we formed a newsletter, and if anybody's from D.C., if you ever see the D.C. link, that's how it got started back in 82. And then in 85, I got involved with the World Convention when it was in D.C. And I want to read this because this is what really happened to me. Is we learn that when we give back what was so freely given to us, we gain more than we ever hoped. Whatever our contributions are, be they service as a trusted servant, as a sponsor, as a speaker, or as a member of our home group, we are given the opportunity to express our gratitude through action. Our contribution to the group and to NA helped to carry the message that recovery from addiction is possible and that no addict seeking recovery need ever die. And so when I got involved with service, it gave me the opportunity to get to know you guys. It gave you guys to get to the opportunity to get to know me. You know, and pretty eventually I felt a part of this program, and, you know, the fear of my handicap, letting people know about it, lifted. And, you know, I just got to know everybody, and that's the blessing for me. That was truly a blessing. And, you know, even though I was very involved in service, like, my first 3 to 5 years, and somebody, Doreen from D.C., told me that if service can do for me what it did for me, think about what it would do for somebody else, the newer person. So I kind of, like, stepped back, and I let other people, you know, do some of this work, even though I did take positions as a chairperson, and I am a sponsor. And today, that's my service. And I get a lot of gratitude from that, you know, because I get help from them, they get help from me. And that is about it. I'm not one of these people that quotes from the book. That's why I had to type it out. So anyway, thank you for letting me share.
Thank you. Thank you, Kathy. I'd like to introduce our second speaker, Kip W.
Hello, family. I'm an addict, and my name is Kip. By the grace of God, I stand here in front of everybody today, able to share with you what I have to share with you. It seems to me that the title of this workshop says a lot. It says, Serve Yourself Clean. And this talk is about, to me, that's talking about using service to get clean, to stay clean, and maybe learn a few things about yourself. And when I got here, I had no idea what service was unless it was self-service. And so when I heard the title of this workshop, I said, what a great workshop. Serve Yourself Clean. Because I knew how to do it before I got clean. Now I figured I'd learn how to do something new. And that's not at all what this is about. What this is about for me is participating in my recovery. Using service to keep me in the center of what I'm doing so that I'm not out on the street shooting dope, selling dope, causing people problems, because I did that for a long, long time. When I got clean, I had this thing. I wanted to fit in because I didn't want to live the life that I was living before I got here. So I got a sponsor because people told me you got to get a sponsor. So I went up to this guy with long hair and a lot of tattoos. I said, hey, man, will you be my sponsor? And he's like, sure I will. That was probably the biggest mistake I have ever made. I love him to death. He's one of my closest friends. However, we used to go to meetings a lot in a place in Manassas, Virginia, in a place called The Club, and you could smoke in there. So our meetings were smoking meetings, and he would say, hey, go back in that room and clean up them ashtrays. And I'd look at him and I'd say, why the hell should I go clean up the ashtrays? And he'd say, because you'll probably find recovery under one of them. So like an idiot, I would go in there and clean up the ashtrays. And I did it over and over. I got to tell you, that was quite a few years. That was over 5 years ago, and I still have not found recovery under one single ashtray in my whole time clean. What I did learn about was doing something for somebody other than me. What I learned about was doing the right thing for the right reason, which is what our basic text defines service as. I learned a lot about climbing into the middle of the bed, so to speak, and I'm sure that some of you have heard that term. And when I climb into the middle of the bed, I find that I'm not near the edge. I'm not going to fall off back into the horrors of my addiction. I'm not going to fall off back into using again. And so I do service. At first, service was handing out some chips, you know, key tags in a meeting, or making coffee before a meeting, or showing up to unlock a door, which I didn't do very religiously. You know, I would have the key, and sometimes you could get in and sometimes you couldn't, and I really didn't care which was which at the time, because when I got clean, it was about me. It wasn't about you. And luckily that's changed. I've learned that I don't take the key to meetings anymore because I can't count on myself to be there to open the door. I learned that doing service means that you pick up the phone when it rings at 3 o'clock in the morning. And I learned that because there was somebody there for me when I called at 3 o'clock in the morning saying, man, I want to use. And somebody was there to answer the phone. And this person got sick and tired of me calling them at 3 o'clock in the morning and said, man, you don't want to use. I said, don't tell me I don't want to use. I'm calling you to tell you I want to use. They said, man, you don't want to use. I said, what do you mean? They said, if you wanted to use, you would go and use. You wouldn't call me at 3 o'clock in the morning to try to stop you. The fact is, you don't want to use. I said, okay. And I said, well, then why do you keep answering the phone at 3 o'clock in the morning? And he said, it's about service, Kip. He said, they taught me when I came here that when the phone rings at 3 o'clock in the morning, you better freaking answer it because God is calling you. And I said, wow, that's pretty heavy, man. But okay, God's calling, whatever. So I continued to call at 3 o'clock in the morning until he said, don't freaking call me unless you're going to use. And so I grew and I learned something about being there for somebody else. And now when my phone rings at 3 o'clock in the morning, if I'm awake enough to answer it, I answer it. Although I sleep like a rock, so if you call me at 3 o'clock in the morning, you better have other phone numbers because I'm probably not going to hear it. Service to me is about doing, like I said, the right things for the right reason. That means that I'm going to show up. I'm going to suit up and I'm going to show up. I'm going to talk to you when you're having a hard time. I'm going to share with you my experience, strength, and hope because it's all I have to give to you. Okay? And most of what I got out of this program, I will share. Most of what I say in a meeting and give back is not my own. It's borrowed. I stole my recovery from you people. Thank God you let me steal it because otherwise I wouldn't have anything to give back. Today I feel very fortunate that I have something to give back. My life has been tumultuous since I got clean. And the details of all of that are unimportant. However, I have, to my knowledge, a vast network of people who I count on who have given me their experience. And I turn around and I give it back because it's something worth giving back. If people did not give back what they were so freely given, this fellowship would not be here. If we did not show up to open the doors of the churches or meeting halls so that there could be meetings, there would be no meetings. And without meetings, we as dope fiends would die. I believe that. I remember what it's like to sit there holding a needle in one hand and a pistol in the other, saying, which one do I have the guts to do? And having somebody walk in and say, man, what the hell are you doing? And me being loaded going, I need some help, man. And luckily there was a meeting that I could get to. Luckily there was another addict who's been where I've been to say, hey, you don't have to go down that road. So I'm going to give it back because hopefully there's not going to be some dope fiend sitting there with a pistol in one hand and an overdose in the other who doesn't have a meeting to go to and ends up doing something that one of us would regret. I serve on levels other than making coffee now. I'm a GSR in one area. I'm the RCM in another. I have volunteered my time to work on the stage crew that's going on down in the main hall tonight. I'm speaking right here, right now, all because I want to be a part of my recovery. I could sit here and keep stealing it from y'all, but eventually I'm not going to have much to take anymore. So I try to give back a little bit. I want to participate. If I'm participating in my recovery, doing some service, working some steps, talking to dope fiends at 3:30 in the morning, or paying forward the cup of coffee that somebody so freely bought for me when we're sitting in the diner at 2 o'clock in the morning after a meeting on a Friday night, all of those things, they all add up to some kind of a service. Doing the right things for the right reasons. My sponsor used to have me do weird stuff like walk down the street, and when I'd see a bunch of like parking meters that were expired, I was supposed to put quarters in them and not tell anybody I did it. And I was like, what do you mean don't tell anybody? He's like, that's about self-service, Kip. You need to do it so that you're not recognized for your actions. You need to do it because it's the right thing to do. That still doesn't make sense to me. But I did it once. And in spite of myself, I stayed clean. I walked down the same street and I said, you know, I can put quarters in those machines, or I can go into that bar on the corner. So I put quarters in the machine and I walked by the bar and I said, man, I just spent all my beer money. I don't like this. But I didn't go in and buy any beer. Matter of fact, to be honest, it didn't cross my mind to go into the bar and buy any beer. I just did the right thing because somebody told me to do it. And I needed to prove that I could do what I was told to do. I needed to prove it to them. I needed to prove it to myself. I needed to prove to somebody else that the service that they were going out of their way to provide was actually being appreciated. I've been clean since September 1st, 1998. I've done a lot of things that are self-serving since I got clean. I've taken on a service position and then 2 weeks later said, I'm not doing this, because of a clash of personalities, because I didn't want to exercise the 12th tradition, which talks about putting principles before personalities. I've had to go back and work through that stuff. Service is getting through it so that I'm still here to provide later on. I don't have a whole lot to say. I do know this. That if we didn't give it back, nobody'd be here. If somebody in this room did not stand up and give back what was so freely given to themselves, this program would die. And in the process, so would all of us. I feel very lucky and fortunate to be alive and clean today, because the way I lived my life for a long time does not speak of that possibility. So when I think about that luxury of being clean and being here today, not being in jail, not being under the ground, not being locked up with the Love Me jacket on. When I think about those possibilities, I say, you know what? If service means that I join the hug squad for 10 minutes and give somebody a hug because they might be hurting, that's well worth it to me, because I'd give anything to stay clean today, just today. Tomorrow may never come. Yesterday is gone. If I can stay clean today, I got a chance. So service gives me hope. It gives me a program to attend. It gives me a reason to keep on living. And with that, I'm going to keep coming back. I know I didn't talk for very long, but I think I made my point. So have a great convention. Thanks for my share.
Thank you, Kip and Kathy. At this time, the meeting is open. If anybody would like to share, come on up to the microphone, please. And remember that there are other addicts that need to share, so please try to limit your sharing to approximately 5 minutes. Thank you.
Joe. I was listening to both the speakers. I'd like to thank Kathy, and I'd like to thank Kip for sharing. Service has kept me clean. I really like to thank Kathy. I used in D.C., and I went to old D.C. jail. I don't even think y'all even know what I'm talking about. I was on 19th Street. You know, and they used to have my black ass in CB2, and I fuck up, and I go to 3, and I fuck up, and you know, and that's the first place I ever went to jail, and that's like real special to me, you know, because I spent like 13 years of my life in prison, and I got clean in prison. I heard the message of Narcotics Anonymous, my third bit. I've been clean 18 years. I got clean in prison. My first 5 years of being clean was in prison. Somebody from H&I brought the meeting. How I heard the message was, you know, I'm an old convict. So they done told me, say that if you go to these meetings and you go for 20 weeks, they'll give you this piece of paper. You take this piece of paper to the parole board. The parole board will give you some play, you know. Now, this is my third bit, and I ain't never been paroled, so you got to understand, this shit sound like good shit to me. So I said, yeah, I'm going to do this. And I went in there, and I'm just telling you about my experience. The first meeting I ever went to, it was like 18 people in there, and it was only 2 people clean. It was me and the person from H&I. Everybody else was in there nodding, they're scratching their dicks, they're just slobbering all over everything. And I'm wondering, say, now don't this dude know that everybody here is high? Because if he don't know that they're high, he ain't talking about shit. You know what I mean? Because I know that they're high. Don't he know that they're high? He's talking about spiritual principles and steps and getting clean. And I'm saying, damn, man. He said some things, and I was just talking, like I said, I'm telling my story. He said some things that let me know he was an addict like me. And once I heard that, he had something I wanted. What I'm trying to tell you is that, you know, I kept coming back. And what I need to tell y'all is my first year of coming to NA, I came in handcuffs. I also escaped from prison. So how I went to meeting with the guard would have me handcuff me, and they'd take me there. They'd sit in the room while everybody was sharing. It got to be to the point. I remember the first time that I walked across the yard without the cuffs on. Police was still with me. And we walked together. I thought I was going to come on myself. I said, God damn, this is freedom. This not no big shit to y'all, but this was big shit to me. Did they trust me to let me walk from one building to another without cuffs? I said, shit, this shit works. And maybe, you know, and what I'm trying to explain to you, it was those little things like that in my recovery that kept teaching me this. You know, what I got so involved in NA in prison, they used to call it Jose. And what I need to tell y'all is maybe, you know, I went to meetings, I didn't do 90 and 90 days, I did 90 and 90 weeks. And maybe I went to meetings with about 2,000 people in prison. I've never seen any of those guys on the outside because say, I didn't use when I got out. I need to tell you that. But I stayed clean. You know, I started opening the meeting. I started closing it. I got out. I got involved with a home group. You know, I did PI for 11 years. I wouldn't do H&I. You know, you've been locked up 13 years. I will go to prison and speak if you ask me. But that is not my drop in NA. I used to like to do PI because, you know, you go to the high school. Then when they started all this crazy shit in the high schools, I said, shit, maybe I need to go to prison because, you know, them trench coat people, you know, I don't want to be fucking around with them. I want to go in a safe place. But the thing was, is that I know that if you can reach them when they're young, they got a chance, you know. And I've been involved in service the whole time, you know, that I've been clean. I'm still open and closed my home group today. What I like to tell you, though, and this is just my experience because we have steps and we have traditions that talk about this. You know, I do volunteer work on the outside. I didn't get clean in a treatment center. I've only picked up one white chip. I got clean in prison. I got tired of that shit in prison. I've stayed clean ever since. I don't know what it is to relapse. I've never been to a treatment center other than the share. You know, I do volunteer work today to keep treatment centers open. I do stuff, you know, with a nonprofit organization. Me, Joe Convict, I'm president of this. I work with the state of Virginia, with the governor, in a program to keep treatment centers open for other addicts. You know, and that's still me giving back because that's something I never experienced. See, I know not everybody needs to go to prison like I needed to go to prison. You know, some people need to go to treatment centers. Some people walk into meetings and get clean. But what I'll tell you this is that as long as I stay involved in NA, I felt close to NA. I never felt a difference. You know, and a lot of people say that, you know, if you, he's talking that stuff about the phone call at late at night. What my experience is about relapse, you make your mind up to relapse sitting in a meeting. When you say, I don't want to hear a fucking thing that black-ass dude up there talking about, you're setting yourself up for relapse. Not that I'm God or I got some great message. When you start closing yourself to what other addicts want to say, you stop hearing the message, you start the process of relapse. When you got the dope in your hand, you've already used. I don't know about y'all. I am not one of them addicts that ever threw any dope in the toilet and say, I got a spiritual awakening. I'm going to go to a meeting. If I got the dope in my hand, I'm going to use it. You understand? Fuck it. I'll go to a meeting tomorrow and get that white chip, but I'm going to use this shit. Okay? So I'm just being honest. So what I'm saying is that relapse start when I start closing my mind and closing myself off and stop doing things. You know, and I see that. Because she didn't talk about this, and I'm not going to hold you hostage, but I need to say this. Like I said, I've been clean 18 years. This is my 19th year I'm working on. A lot of the people that got clean with me, they're not involved with service no more. They only come to meetings for Kathy's celebration. Am I making sense to you? Joe's celebration, big events. You know, when you talk to them about service work, I have been the GSR, I've been the ASR, I've been, you know, head of H&I. I've done my bit in the pits, you know. And the next thing you know is that what I notice is when I stop seeing my friends doing service work and being involved, I start seeing my friends disappear. I just start seeing them disappear and disappear. You know, and I just share this with you. Being an old convict and thief like me, I'm not a cattle rustler because I couldn't steal, but I know how to rustle cattle. You never rustle the whole fucking herd. You got to cut one off. You got to cut them off till you can get them by itself. Then you can snatch it. That's the same way this disease works. It pulls you from the group, pulls you from the group, gets you by yourself, then it snatches you. That's why I like to stay involved. That's why I do service. You know, it's a pain in the ass. I make bad coffee. Everybody hates my coffee. But it keeps me clean. Okay? You know what I mean? I'm a real bad at it, but it keeps me clean. I probably make some of y'all sick. You know, but I ain't trying to do it. I really don't drink coffee. You know what I mean? So, I mean, I care, but I don't care. I just want to stay clean, and I'll do anything. You know, and one of the things that we don't talk about much is I did something in my area, and a lot of people hate me for it. I started some special interest groups. I started a meeting that was for HIV, for people that was in Narcotics Anonymous. That's some shit we don't talk about in meetings. You know, I started that meeting with five other people. All five of them had AIDS, and I didn't. All five of them are dead today. I'm still alive. And what I need to tell y'all, that meeting is still open. And that is a real open subject that you'll hear everybody talking about now, being HIV positive. You know, I started a men's group. They said, oh, there you go again, starting some more crap. But I felt like I need, as a man today, I love my wife. I love the ground she walks on. But I need men in my life today. And that's real important. So the stuff I need to do, I do around here. And that works for me. You know, and as long as I keep being involved, I believe I got a chance. Thanks for allowing me to share. 5 minutes? All right.
Thank you, Joe. We still have more time. Would anybody else like to share? Again, the topic is serve yourself clean. My name's Cornell. I'm an addict. I'd like to share a little bit about how service has truly blessed my life. Just a brief incident. Last week, I was involved with stuffing the envelopes for the convention because the Tri-County area was putting on this convention. And this program will change your life if you keep showing up, believe it or not, whether you want to change or not. I walked into the building to help out, and as soon as I got in, somebody said, come over here, you got to start filling these boxes. And you know, at first I kind of wanted to get an attitude. It's like I ain't even getting here and get my coat off, and they just throwing me in the middle of this thing. But this program has taught me that if you ask to do something for Narcotics Anonymous, you need to do it. So I grabbed a box, and they said, put 65 of these envelopes in each box and then take them over there. So I did that. When I got the box over there, I set the box down. I saw a tape machine, so I started taping it. And the guy said, oh, that's my job. You just fill the boxes. So again, immediately, you know, I wanted to get an attitude, but they told me, don't do that. You have to remain humble. So I went back and I stuffed some more boxes. This young lady came up and she saw me struggling with stuffing the boxes. And she said, well, if you rotate the envelopes, it's easier to get 65 of them in there. And I'm thinking, who is she? You know, but again, I remained humble. And I took her suggestion, I started rotating the envelopes, and they went in a whole lot smoothly. And then life's starting to get better. And I found that since I've been in this program, if I'm able to keep an open mind and take suggestions, stay involved in service, my life gets better. So I'm rolling now. I'm filling the boxes, I'm rotating them, and I'm taking them over there. I'm not taking them up because that's somebody else's job. And this other guy walks in the room, he said, hey, you hand the envelopes to me. And I'm like, he just walked in. He hasn't been here 30 seconds. I've been working for almost an hour now. He just walks in off the street, and he's going to tell me how to do this. Again, I remained humble. I started taking stacks of five and handing them to this guy, and he was taking them, putting them in the box. Then I grab another five, and I hand them to the other guy. And the process got smoother. We started stuffing boxes at a rapid rate. And again, that was the therapeutic value of one addict helping another. And it was without parallel. And it was all because of what you people taught me, how to remain humble, take suggestions, get involved in service, help somebody with no strings attached. So I'm saying that this program has changed my life tremendously. I have learned how to remain humble most of the time. You know, initially, sometimes I want to flare up. And I was sharing with my girlfriend on the way down here that I was on the Beltway, on my way to her house, and some guy was behind me in this truck, and He was in an awful hurry, but I couldn't change lanes. So when I finally was able to change lanes, I got over, and he zipped past me and ran through radar on the beltway. So then he takes the first exit to duck off to get away from the cop, and he looks at me and flips me the bird, and I just laugh. You know, there was a time when that would have upset me, would have ruined my day. But again, this program has changed me. You know, it's about your perception of things, you know. And I know this program works, and I don't want to take you people hostage, but we still have a few minutes left if anybody else cares to share. And thank you for allowing me to share.
I'm an addict named Brian. And I just want to come up here and share some of my experience that I have with some service. I'm a little nervous. For me, I came in here, and I had a couple months clean, and there was a meeting right down the street from me about, you know, a quarter mile. And I'm one of these lazy addicts, you know, real self-centered, you know. So I'm like, you know, I want to go to the closest meeting I can find, you know, and that would be fine for me. And I show up there, and this is a Step Tradition meeting, you know, and you know, not knowing, you know, people don't end up showing up there to those meetings too often. I don't know why, but I went to this meeting, and you know, it was neat at the time, you know, and you know, I stayed around for a month or so, and you know, they needed a chip person, you know, and I ended up taking this chip position, and I'm sitting there, and I'm starting to give out chips, and I'm kind of sticking around a little bit for a month or two, and all of a sudden, everybody's starting to disappear that had service positions there. And that meeting kept on getting smaller. And until one night, I got really scared. And I said, you know what, there's not going to be a person at that meeting. You know, and I got so scared that I stayed at home that night. And I didn't show up to my service position that night, you know. And I got a phone call, like the meeting's a 7:30 meeting. And I got a phone call around 9 o'clock that night. And it was another recovering addict who had a couple years. And, you know, he said, hey, Brian, I said, you know, I noticed that you weren't there. I was wondering if you had a service position there. I saw that you gave out chips and stuff like that. And I said, yeah, I do. He says, well, I didn't see you there. And I came to the meeting. The lights were off, and there was no chair set up, and there wasn't anything ready to be done for that meeting. And I said, I know. I said, man, I said, I wasn't going to show up because I was afraid that was going to happen. I said, what am I supposed to do? You know, what am I going to do? He says, you know, like, I don't know what to do. You know, I got, like, 4 months clean, you know. I you know, like, I can't do this, you know. And he says, man, just, you know, show up. You know, set up some chairs, make some coffee. You know, just be there for another suffering addict who needs a meeting. You know, and I started taking that a little step further, man. How would I feel if that's my first meeting ever going to and that door's locked? You know, I'm standing out there in the cold, and I'm trying to find some recovery. I'm trying to find some hope, you know, and there's no one there to give it to me. There's no hugs. There's nothing, you know. And that person, me or anyone else, might not come back for years or at all. They might go out and die that night, you know. And that brought my service work to another level, you know, to make a responsibility to show up to these meetings, you know, where I had service work, you know, and I started showing up at that particular meeting. And I did that. I started doing that every week, you know, and I had another addict that freaking, you know, she needed a ride every week, you know, and so I dope fiend her, but, you know, to get here early with me, you know, because I said, you want a ride, you got to show up early, you know. And we started setting up this meeting, you know. It was really scary because, you know, she you know, she didn't have too much recovery, and I didn't have much either, you know, and there was no GSR, and, you know, we had 5 or 6 people there, and we're reading the Step Traditions, you know. And, you know, I finally went to area service because I was going to be an alternate GSR. You know, I said, hey, maybe this is a good time to let them know what's going on, you know. And it was really cool to see this meeting kind of grow again and see some service positions get filled and see that, you know, it was, just took one addict being unselfish to actually show up and do a couple things and let people know that this meeting's hurting and needs some help, you know. And it's really cool to see it grow, you know. And other times, you know, I get a little self-centered. I'm like, oh, you ain't making the coffee right, or, you know, like about these positions, you know. And I'm like, you know, because this is my baby, you know. I saved it, you know. But it wasn't about me. You know, that's not what it's about. It's about one addict helping another, you know. And for me, service keeps me clean, you know. It keeps me from doing a lot of things. I had a point in my recovery where, you know, I was clean, but I was doing a lot of dirty stuff, you know. I mean, I was about going to D.C., you know, and getting a trick, you know, and it became a very bad part of my recovery, you know, for quite a few months. You know, I get a phone call and somebody just came back from a run and they needed a ride to go to Arlington to pick up their car, but I was too busy getting my own. I was too busy trying to get my own shit, you know, and I can't do that today. You know, that made me feel a little guilty, but I was too caught up in my self-obsession to go out and, you know, and to help another addict. You know, I remember pawning off, you know, I had about 3 or 4 service positions. I remember pawning off at least 1 service position on somebody else because I had to go get my own that night because I couldn't get it earlier in the day, you know, and I felt so guilty. I felt really guilty about it because I wasn't showing up because I was so self-centered. You know, I wasn't willing to do these things that kept me clean. You know, and that helped me because, you know, I needed to reach out and get some help. And I know I needed to be those meetings for myself, but I also had to be there for someone else because I remember what it felt like when I go and set up a meeting, you know, to be there for somebody else that needs some help. And I needed help too. I was suffering, man. You know, I was in pain and I couldn't be there, you know, for somebody else, but I also needed some help, you know, and that's where I needed to be. And, you know, because of service work, it kept me coming back. Because I had a responsibility, and I'd stuck around long enough to know that I can't just give this up. I can't run away from it, and it's not going to get any better. Because, you know, that's how it works, man. Because this program got me clean. This is what actually helped restore me to sanity, you know. And I believed in it. You know, I believed it helping me. And, you know, that's all you got to do, man. You know, you don't have to believe in anything. Just show up, do some service work each week, you know. Just constantly, just consistently do it. You know, and it's amazing how big of a, you know, change it makes. Because all of a sudden, you know, you might start showing up to work on time and being a little more responsible and not lying and cheating, you know. Like, you know, it's just how it is. And just doing those things made a big difference in my recovery. And service actually saved my life, you know. I mean, that's what it did for me. And, you know, that's why I came up here to give it back. Because it was freely given to me, like I heard it said earlier. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you. We still have time for maybe 2 more speakers. We have 10 minutes.
How's it going? I'm an addict. My name is Lee.
Hey.
I don't really need the microphone. I'm a little loud anyways. You know what service work did for me? It taught me to be there on time. Like, I had this one Monday night meeting. It was a meeting I first went to 5 years ago, the first time I tried to get clean. And it was the best meeting on the block. They were so good to me. They loved me. I was shaking. I was all dope sick. And I showed up at that meeting, and they was good to me. And I went there for a couple months on and off. And I went back out for a couple years. And I had another baby. And I had another baby who was born drug addicted at the not-so-spiritual methadone clinic. And so then I showed back up to this Monday night meeting. And, you know, I started sticking around. And so then I got the service position there. The meeting was at 7:30, and it was a big meeting, but it seemed like nobody wanted to show up to, like, open up the door, set the chairs up. So I started getting there at 7, and I started, you know, now keep in mind, I don't got a driver's license or a car, and that's the joker who would dope fiend me into setting up the Thursday night meeting. And so Monday nights was like 10 minutes from my house, so I was all about getting a ride out there early, and I would set up the meeting, and I started taking some pride in that. I was like, wow, man, you know, like, I'm setting up some chairs, and you don't really need a whole lot of brains for that, you know? You don't even really need that strong of a back to do that. But I just started doing that, and that shit started overspilling into my life. You know, like, I got a job. I hadn't worked for 3 years. You know, I was unemployed. I was unemployable, and I wasn't able to work for 3 years, you know. I'd had the drug-addicted baby, you know. He was all out of control and real sick, and, you know, I can't work if I got to go to the methadone clinic every day. That's an all-day event, you know, and you got to take, like, 3 buses and 2 trains to get down there. So I got a job, right? So now I was clean, and I got a job through another addict in the program. And I started, you know, like, of course, like every other job, you know, like, I started getting there late and everything. But then doing the service work at the same time, like, I started noticing that I was getting to work on time. But, you know, like, the service work here, like, it started spilling out into other areas of my life. Like, I started getting to work on time. Man, my job ain't great. It's, like, all brawn and no brains, you know. I still have that job. It's been a year, you know. And I'm a little bit sharper than I was last year when I started the job. And, man, I take pride in that shit. I got a dumbass job that if I disappear, probably no one would care. I work at a nursery. And I'm not talking about the nursery where they keep the babies, right? I'm talking about, like, you know, like the trees and the landscaping kind of nursery. You know, it's a dirty job, and someone's got to do it, and I'm down with it, man. I'm there on time every morning. I am there early, you know. And it takes me about 45 minutes to get there, and I get a ride every day. I still don't have no car. I still don't have a license. I get to work. I get to my service commitments. I'm just, my whole life's changed because of this program. It's changed, you know, like, just the whole, like, being on time thing is kind of a big event. That's the only time, you know, that I'm on time for something is at a meeting. I couldn't wait to get down here. Last year I was here, and I had 5 months clean last year at this time. And it was the thing that sealed the deal for me. It was this convention that did it. You know, like, I'm so nostalgic about this convention because it sealed the deal for me. At this time last year, I had 5 months clean, and I was still living in this using house. There were these two crackheads there. And I would come home from a meeting and see these jokers peeking out the window. You know, I'm coming home from a meeting. I'm trying to stay clean, you know. And why can't these clowns respect that, you know? So when I came here last year, I went home, and I knew I was done. I knew I was done living in that house, and I saved up my money in 2 months. I was out of there. I packed my kids. I was out of there. You know, I had some friends in the program who showed up with a truck, and they showed up at my house that morning, and they moved me out of that house. Man, I was in that moving truck like it was the last helicopter out of Vietnam. I was done. I was done, and it's been a nice life ever since, and I think you shared good, and I think Kip shared good. So I'm just so glad to be here. I'm so grateful. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you.
Thank you. We have one more volunteer.
Group, my name is Donna. I was a user of illegal drug substance and alcohol, but one night I decided to stop using drugs and alcohol. I wanted a 20 piece of crack and a dime bag of weed to crush up together and at least get a couple of bobs from the dime bag of weed and the 20 bag of crack. And I did. But before I could, I was leaving out the house to cop. And you know how, I know everybody know how you hear that voice tell you don't do that around your house. You hear it, but you act like you don't hear it. It's telling you, you know you're wrong, don't go do that. And at any rate, when you have money on you, and you have things you have to do, you have an income, you know you got something important you have to do, you can hear that little voice. You know, and something else you can do with that other than just go out there and mess it up like you're getting ready to do. And a lot of times, when you use, you don't listen. You know, because you're so addictive to copping and getting that high. Okay, I was like that night. So, I went on and went in my little change, and I went to cop. And I could hear that little voice saying, Donna, don't leave out the door. You don't have to do that. Don't go there. It's not worth it. You know, do something else. Do something worthwhile. So, I went on out the door anyway. And as I was going out the front door to start down the steps, I tripped and fell on my head. God made me miss that step. And you know how you feel shamed and embarrassed and stupid? I felt so dumb. You know, I got up like it didn't bother me or anything and went on and copped anyway. I came back that night. I crushed up my piece of crack. I crushed my weed up. I got me two good bobs out of it. I smoked it. But at the same time, I decided to find a program that would assist me in leaving that alone. And I did. And the program is in the District of Columbia. It's a very good program. That was in 2000 of November. November of 2004, I'll be 5 years clean. I haven't used a drug or alcohol. And with that, that's what I shared with you all this evening, and hope you continue to keep your sobriety and clean time.
We're about out of time. I'd like to